Relations between South Africa and the United States have hit their lowest level since 1994. Joshua Masovi is with the Hudson Institute in Washington. We'll get the latest from him from the, the way that the Americans are viewing this. Josh, before we go into the specifics of why South Africa and the United States are even less in love than they have been at any time since 1994, the whole Venezuela episode of the arrest of Nicolas Maduro and bringing him back to the United States, how do the Americans generally see this? And indeed, from your perspective at the Hudson Institute, how are you reading it?
I think, first, thanks for having me on again, Alec. Good to see you. And I think it's a partisan issue in the United States for many people. So, there's been a lot of predictable criticisms, I would say, from the Democratic Party, who generally will oppose most, if not all, maybe, of President Trump's foreign policy. But I suspect for, certainly for Republicans, I think it's been quite widely even praised and supported. And I think probably for your average American, I haven't seen polling on it, but I suspect that most average Americans would see the justification for it and think that, this was the ruler of a country that was essentially a narco state that was very deliberately flooding the United States with deadly drugs that had killed thousands, tens of thousands of Americans. He was an illegitimate ruler. He had stolen the previous election, and the opposition candidate who probably won, actually supported, as has been supportive in his public remarks, about the raid that captured Maduro. He was under indictment in an American court. So I think, insofar as average Americans will follow all those nuances, I think generally they'd be, fairly supportive of this.
And the fact that the South African government has come out so strongly, almost led the charge against this in the United Nations, presumably that does, of course it's not going to enhance relationships which are already strained, but does it turn South Africa from being a problematic partner into an adversary of the United States?
I don't know if I'd go as far as adversary. Just because that status, that dubious status, is reserved, I would say, for countries that physically threaten the United States in some way, right? So, So obviously, I think you could lump, the Chinas and Russias of the world into that, certainly Iran into that category. South Africa is not any sort of military threat. It is a diplomatic nuisance. I think the view in the United States is that the ANC and South African government are sort of the handmaids of American adversaries. So they are happy and willing accomplices to American adversaries, but they themselves haven't risen to that level.
So the fact that the ANC is making the running on this in the same way as it made the running on Hamas, supporting Hamas after the attack, the October the 7th attack on Israel. Is that perhaps reinforcing a problematic relationship between the two countries?
Yeah, I think so. I think it confirms for Americans what many people who follow these issues have suspected for a while, that the ANC and the South African government that it still has immense influence over, and certainly within DIRCO, the foreign policy apparatus of the South African government, that it is categorically opposed to the United States, that its goals fundamentally are unaligned with what the U.S. wants to achieve in the world, and that it's committed to doing whatever it can to frustrate the U.S. So I think it's yet more confirmation of that problem that has really poisoned the relationship, actually for a long time. But as I frequently say, what has happened recently, particularly under President Trump, even going back to his first term, but also under President Biden, is that the U.S. started to recognize or realize that this was going on. It had been fairly obvious for for years, I would argue. But the U.S. started to notice that actually the ANC and South African government are very consistently antagonistic to United States foreign policy goals, especially.
Be very interested to get your thoughts on this point, because even here in South Africa, we're quite clear that people who are informed are quite clear that Venezuela was a narco state. And there's no debating that, certainly in the US, and that South Africa itself was a channel for quite a lot of the drugs into other parts of the world. And I guess the question really is this being interpreted as just standard anti-imperialistic rhetoric from the ANC, or is there something deeper here? Is it diplomatic cover for a narco state and the issues that happen behind the scenes that haven't quite made it into the public domain yet?
I think it's the latter. Again, among the small group of sort of American policymakers who follow these issues closely, I think that there is a suspicion, and I suspect that some people within the administration know for a fact, probably, if you know, I want to be careful, but if these facts do indeed exist, that there were probably senior South Africans who were benefiting from the narco state operation that Maduro and his wife were running out of their country. To your point, we know narco trafficking from Venezuela, from South America has gone through South Africa. I suspect potentially the even bigger problem were financial flows. South Africa has severe problems in ensuring that its jurisdiction does not get used for money laundering. And I think some of those problems stem from the fact that there are probably senior people within the South African government who benefit from these types of activities. So that is an angle, I believe, that some Americans within, you know, who are in a position to work on these issues and know about them are looking at very closely.
Yet here in South Africa, that penny certainly hasn't dropped. What would do it? What would change people's perceptions towards this?
In South Africans' perceptions, you mean, towards this matter? Yeah. I don't know. It's a good question. My sense, and you would know much better than I would, you're in South Africa, and so you know it much, much better. But my sense is that a lot of your average South African, let's say, is probably pretty suspicious of the ANC because of its long history of profound corruption, and then also it's the just disastrous mismanagement of the country. So I suspect that your average person is, as I say, somewhat suspicious already of the ANC and might believe, almost anything that you would tell them as far as ANC corruption. And of course that affects the South African government just because the ANC is still dominant, within the government. And so I don't know, if there are people out there who I suspect there are some South Africans who are very, very partisan, who will just accept whatever the South African government says at face value, as well as the ANC. But if you sort of step back and take an objective look at these matters, I read the ANC statements about, you know, condemning what went on in Venezuela and invoking anti-imperialism and et cetera, et cetera. The way to understand those, though, and Durko released similar statements. The way to understand those, though, is that when they talk about principle or anti-imperialism or et cetera, what they're actually talking about is tribalism. Like they're talking about their group of people that they support and with whom they share politics. So in this case, the Venezuelan regime. And they want, and the ANC and the South African government will use the language of principle and morality to defend these profoundly unprincipled, vicious, brutal regimes. So we see this with Iran, for instance. I'm waiting with bated breath to see the ANC denounce the Iranian regime for killing protesters in the streets and for repressing women in horrific ways. I think I'll have to wait a very, very long time, because again, this isn't about principle, as most people would recognize it. It's about partisan loyalty. So if the ANC and the South African government believe that either a regime is aligned with it in its anti-Western ideology and actions, or there's usually a lot of overlap between these groups, a regime supported the ANC's liberation struggle, then they will view anything those regimes do as good and just, let's say North Korea, right? Like North Korea runs a gulag system. The ANC will not condemn that, nor will the South African government, because it's their people. It's their tribe, so to speak, right? Using that phrase in a very broad way, because the Kim regime is aligned with South Africa against the West. So when you hear the ANC or the South African government talk about, as I say, principles or anti-imperialism, anti-colonialism, et cetera, that's code for partisan loyalty, right? And so no matter what the Cubas and the Venezuelas and the DPRKs and the Chinas and the Russias and the Irans of the world do, no matter how badly they abuse their own people, no matter how much instability they spread, the ANC and the South African government is going to support them because they're on their side. It really does boil. It's that simple in my analysis when you just look at the massive double standard that the ANC and the South African government applies to situations like Venezuela.
It does appear, though, that they may well be on the wrong side of history and that there is a fresh breeze that's sweeping through Southern Africa. We have interesting developments in Angola, where you need to say that they had the election stolen from them, but they readying up for the next one next 2027. And now in Mozambique, when there was another disputed result in the election and the opposition leader coming back to the country, having had to flee, I think there was 300 people that were killed at the time of that unrest post the election, and saying, no, we will fight them at the ballot box. So it's an interesting development that we're seeing. We ran pieces today on both of those stories, one from the FT and one from The Economist. So I'm just wondering whether what would cause pause within the ANC, or from where you're sitting and from all the stuff that you know and all the background and information that you have both in the United States, which we know is terribly well informed, and from your connections in South Africa, whether you think can the ANC ever change into a organization that actually understands that it might be backing the wrong horses?
I don't believe so. No, I think the ANC is so totally invested in this narrative of that they are these brave anti-imperialist, anti-colonialist, principled warriors. That they would probably suffer a psychic break if they had to take a really objective look at their own actions and the types of regimes that they've ended up supporting. The suffering that the regimes they support have brought to people all around the world is extraordinary. Again, they're out there defending Maduro and demanding his release and leading the charge against what the United States did. Maduro stole the previous election. Again, I guess I'd have to go back and look, but I know I won't find anything as far as ANC condemning the stolen election that Maduro launched. Maduro brought in Cuban troops to help repress his own people, and to ensure his stay in power. And again, this was a narco kingpin. The best way to think about him is as a cartel leader in many ways. And I believe there's even been indictments around murder and kidnapping and other issues. And then we can think, I've already referenced North Korea and its gulag system. China is ethnically cleansing its Xinjiang region of ethnic minorities and religious minorities. It has launched a crackdown against Christian pastors, pastors of underground Christian churches that are staying outside of Beijing's control, because Beijing demands that it control churches and any other sort of religious establishments. Cuba, dictatorship, Russia invaded Ukraine, has killed many, many Ukrainian civilians, kidnapped Ukrainian children, thousands of them, potentially tens of thousands. We may never know. These are the regimes that the ANC defends. And it's difficult to know how they look at themselves in the mirror. I really mean that. I'm not even trying to be provocative. So I think in order for them to square that circle, for them to think about themselves as good and moral and just and righteous crusaders for anti-colonialism and principle and et cetera, while still supporting these openly vicious regimes, they have to do an extraordinary amount of mental gymnastics. And they have to figure out a way to justify that to themselves, which would be almost impossible to unravel, I suspect. They've built an edifice, that would be very hard to tear down. For any human being, we're all humans are great at fooling themselves, and especially about our own morality and our own goodness. And when it's so core to someone's identity, like I think it is in the ANC, that it makes it, I think it makes it probably impossible for them to change course.
Well, this has been the Republic of No Consequences. We've had endless commissions which have exposed corruption. We've had a GDP per capita that has grown slower than the population for the last 10 years. And anybody who knows just the vaguest amount about economics knows that that is not sustainable. So there's been no consequences internally. What about the consequences externally? There are certain bills that are going through the U.S. Congress at the moment. Can you outline those for us and what they might mean?
Yeah. So the bills, the relevant bills here are, of course, Representative Ronnie Jackson's bill that calls for the State Department, U.S. State Department, to write a report about the sanctionable officials in South Africa, and then to provide a justification if State Department chooses not to sanction those individuals. So that's still in the legislative process. It's hard. It's slow going, as I've said before. To get a standalone bill like that, especially on an issue that is not high priority probably for leadership in the House and on the Senate side, tough going. But I know the people who work on it are really trying to make it happen. And it does have a companion bill in the Senate by Senator Kennedy that dropped last year. That does help a bit. So it'll be interesting to look at the congressional calendar, see how these things progress. They still have a long way to go, frankly, but the people working it are pushing and hoping it happens. But it doesn't, things like sanctions on corrupt officials, let's say, in South Africa, does not require a congressional bill. That's something that is well within the mandate of the executive to do if it so chooses. So Treasury, Department of Treasury or Department of State could work up sanctions and impose those. And I know that there's still movement within DC to try to facilitate that and make that happen. We'll see if it works out, but I wouldn't be surprised if it does. I have no idea on timing or such, but I think that would be the tool that the United States would reach for probably. If it did indeed try to impose some consequences on South African officials for their continued, both their looting of their own country, but also their involvement. I'm sure some are involved, as we've already discussed, in some of the narco trafficking that was going on through South Africa, or is maybe still going on, and the money, related money, even terrorism financing. It's pretty widely discussed that South Africa is probably a potential hotbed for this sort of thing. So, there's all sorts of different vectors here for American sanctions against South African officials. And I, as I said, I suspect targeted sanctions would be the routes that the U.S. would take. Now, there's others. There's discussion of reauthorizing and extending AGOA, which is the preferential trade access system designed for Africa. A big debate there would be whether South Africa should be included in any sort of reauthorization or should be included among the countries that benefit from AGOA if it is indeed reauthorized. I suspect it would not be included because it's so clearly is not within the parameters of countries that are supposed to benefit from this type of trade access arrangement. So, and then, you know, there's potential other avenues that the U.S. could pursue, but we'll see. Nothing is certain, and these are all very uncertain and long and complex processes.
Well, unlike Russia, China, and Iran, South Africa is a democracy, so there is a ballot box. And I presume that given the way that what you've sketched here about the way that the ANC perceives itself and its views in a global sense, it would only see South Africa's reestablishing friendly relationships with the United States if there were to be a change in government. Is that an assessment that is rational?
So I think the ANC perhaps is hoping that the midterm elections will go very badly for the Republicans, and Democrats will take both the House and the Senate or gain some more legislative power than they currently have. And there are elements of the Democratic Party that are really sympathetic to the ANC. There are absolutely elements of the Democratic Party that share the ANC's worldview on some of these issues. But I always caution, it was under a Democratic president when the U.S. first publicly rebuked South Africa about its activities. This was the Lady R issue, when Ambassador Ruben Brigady brought that up in a press conference, or called a press conference to address it, actually. And then I know from conversations I've had with Democratic staffers, et cetera, you know, going back to when President Biden was in office, that they were very concerned about what was going on in South Africa. And it's useful to remember as well that when Representative Jackson's bill passed out of committee, which is one hurdle that bills have to clear, that seven or nine Democrats voted for it. So this is not a strictly Republican issue. This is a bipartisan issue in some real ways. So putting all their eggs in the basket of hoping that Democrats win the elections, both in the midterms and then at the end of President Trump's term here, is obviously risky and fraught, because they could end up with President Vance for 8 years or another Republican. So it's I don't know if that's the strategy, but I've heard rumors that it is from the ANC, is basically hold on and hope that Democrats eventually take power. But as far as the situation now between the U.S. and South Africa, yeah, it's hard to foresee this relationship improving until the ANC is no longer as dominant. Certainly on the foreign policy portfolio, it very much dominates DERCO. So it's really hard to see, how this relationship improves in the near term, because this has been going on for a while now, and it's a cycle almost. Every month, month and a half, 2 months, South Africa and the ANC will do something that provokes the United States, despite the trade talks that have been going on for months and months, despite all the protestations from the South African government that it wants better relations with the United States. I think the ANC and the South African government and because ANC officials are very prominent within that government, it just can't help itself for the reasons we've discussed.
You do have a new U.S. ambassador who has now arrived in Pretoria. Brent Bazell is due to meet with the South African president, Ramaphosa. Might that be a beginning of an easing of the problems? Do you think he's got any mandate to fix things?
I suspect he does have a mandate to fix things, but from the American perspective, fixing things will require Pretoria to make some difficult political decisions and to stop doing things like, proclaiming their love for a narco trafficker, parading as a president in Venezuela. So my sense is that And again, I hate making predictions. It's the fastest way to look stupid. But I suspect that Ambassador Bazelle will be there to deliver hard messages, probably. And I think he may have a fairly tumultuous stay there. I hope not. I hope these issues can be worked out. But I'm growing pretty pessimistic about it, because it does require action on the side of the South African government that it has demonstrated for months now that it's just unwilling or unable to take.
It is interesting, looking back, that South Africa did expel the Israeli ambassador. Things get any worse. Is it out of the question that Bazelle would be expelled? In the same way, I suppose, as the Americans expelled the South African ambassador?
Yeah, I think it's possible. Again, who knows? I don't know what the trigger for that would be, but it is a way that countries express their displeasure with other countries, which was what was happening in the case of the downgrading of relations between South Africa and Israel. The PNGing of Ebrahim Rasool, the former South African ambassador in the United States, was more about what he personally had been saying, previous remarks that came up that were highly inflammatory and directed specifically at President Trump. So that was somewhat unique case. Certainly, I think if Ambassador Bazelle makes highly inflammatory remarks about President Ramaphosa, yeah, he'd probably get PNG'd pretty quickly. But he also may, who knows, depending on how this relationship goes, he may get expelled by the South Africans at some point. Maybe he gets recalled by the Americans, or maybe he serves out his term and, has a smoother ride than I think he will have. But I hope he has that easier time, because that would mean, by my analysis, that Pretoria has taken some worthwhile decisions and made some real taken action to improve the relationship, which is what is necessary.
Well, Donald Trump is going to be in Davos. He won't be there for long, as per usual. He'll fly in with his helicopters and probably fly out 24 hours later. But and he will certainly have a very busy schedule. Is this important enough, though, for him to make time to have a cup of tea with Cyril Ramaphosa?
I would be surprised if he sits down for a bilat on the sidelines of Davos with President Ramaphosa. I'm not sure they have much to talk about, frankly, right now, because the situation is in stasis. The U.S. has made its disappointments and its demands pretty clear. And now the ball is fully in Pretoria's court, and it has been for months now, but there just hasn't been much progress on that side. So I'm not sure, as I said, they have much to discuss because we're just seem to be stuck right now.
And for South Africans, this is all interesting when we look at it as geopolitics, but for South Africans, what do we do? What do people here do? What do we look for as a best case scenario? And on the counter side, what do we need to be aware of to see this situation deteriorating still further?
Yeah. Well, I think, South Africans can observe the actions of their government. They can observe Iranian and Russian and Chinese warships off the coast of Cape Town doing exercises with the South African Navy. And they can just see whether their government is doing things that will antagonize the United States. These things are all really well documented. And it's not hard to discern that something like, the head of South African Defense Forces going to Tehran and proclaiming South Africa's undying loyalty to Tehran, as happened some months ago, would upset the United States. So, I think it's, if they want to do the inside baseball in Washington, D.C. type thing, then they could track the progress of these bills, Ronny Jackson's bill and Senator Kennedy's bill. That would be another indicator of how the relationship is going. It will be interesting to see Ambassador Bozell and his public remarks and the meetings that he does, et cetera, as he takes up his tenure in South Africa. Because I think he will be a very faithful messenger of the messages that Washington is sending to Pretoria and vice versa, I'm sure. I'm sure Pretoria will see him as an interlocutor, at least in the early goings here. So, fundamentally, I really don't think anything changes until the South African government takes demonstrable action on some of these issues that lie at the heart of the problems between the US and South Africa. If there is movement on those issues, then I think there's probably cause for optimism. If there continues to be not, if there continues to be these types of provocations from the South African government, then I think the relationship just, it's already on life support and it just gets worse from there.
Joshua Masirvi is with the Hudson Institute. He looks after the Africa portfolio. And I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.